Right, so we have the daily graphic all set for special voting on Monday. Clearly, we are just at it, Koyo. It's just 10 days. And to think that on Monday, security agents and other people who perform special duties on election day, especially the media, all is set for the special voting on Monday. That's according to the Electoral Commission. Yesterday, the EC Chair, Jane Benson, met with security heads during an interaction with the National Security Task Force led by Inspector General of Police, Dr. George Agufo-Dampare. The EC chairperson said, the exercise would take place in 238 special voting centers across 276 constituencies. A total of 131,478 personnel will take part in the special voting. They've qualified to vote. The special voting is restricted to members of the security agencies, media and electoral office officials who have applied and followed through the process to successful end, and they have adequate machines, BVLs, and everything needed for this to happen. And she makes the point that this is clearly a test case of how they would do on December 7th itself.
Listen, somebody has just texted me that what happened to you happened to him yesterday. The weird thing, though, is that you've told us which bank. This guy, this person, it happened to him at a different bank. Same thing. He says, happened to me yesterday. I made a payment twice, same time, 5:30. They said there was a tech issue, but the payment was made.
I know, you know, from bank to bank, they're able to reverse, you know, these transactions. So, but it's really very scary.
Yeah, it's really very scary.
So if you transfer the money and the person just cashed it, right?
Yeah, I mean, somebody that you don't. In fact, when I spoke to the call center, the first person, but we are hoping that the person hasn't, you know, cleared the money.
That's what they said.
The call center person told me.
Well, that's their liability then. Yeah. If it happened, yeah, because clearly
they should hope the person hasn't taken the money, not you. You know how they make it seem like you should keep your fingers crossed.
Ah, she was telling you.
Yeah, that's the
problem. That you should hope that.
I mean, let's just pray that the person.
They should pray. I mean, what? you dear.
Try not give me my money and see what happens.
So there are also other stories on the daily graphic front page. Vote number one on December 7th. That's according to Dr. Bahomia. He is campaigning here in the Greater Accra region. Western region chiefs appeal to Mahama for development. Also on page 13. Of the daily graphic. So I mean, it's all politics here in the paper, and the middle page has some business stories, but everything points to the fact that the election is just near and everybody's setting ready to go.
You know, yesterday the Electoral Commission issued the statement about the restrictions
of the media.
And I've just been thinking about it, because it goes down. Initially, I thought, it would just be for the main office, for the national, but it goes down to the constituency level as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that is going to work out, restricting the number of media houses that can be at the collation center at any point.
Yeah, I think,
what's the advantage of that? In the past, they never restricted.
No.
So this time around, they are doing it to improve what? Or to solve which problem?
I don't know the rationale, but I'm thinking of probably space.
Space,
so that you don't have so many media persons at the collation center. Space? But again, also, then the discretion to allow which one to come is left at the thinking of the electoral officer there.
Wait a second. Wait. Space.
Well, that is a possible explanation I can come to.
So this is communication that the Electoral Commission sent to its regional directors and outlined that only 8 media houses would be accredited at each constituency collation center. 3 TV stations with 2 personnel per station and 5 radio stations with 1 representative each.
Which 3? Which 5?
Ah.
So, for example, Joy News. Which in which constituencies will Joy News not be able to see what happens in the collation center? In which ones? Who is going to make that decision?
So here's what I think.
Will Joy News be part of that decision? Why does the EC even feel it has the power to determine which media houses can and cannot observe the election? Who gave them that authority?
You know, Electoral Commission, I think, you know, let's not create issues. No, there's something fundamentally going wrong here. There's good time for you to pull back this circular to your, you know, your original directors, because really, there are lots of places that not many media houses would go anyway.
Right.
So what's the need for Mama this?
Mama B, you cry. You are even, you know, applying some practicality to it as if, you know, there won't be much effect from this decision. But there will be a great effect. The Electoral Commission does not have the mandate to restrict the media from how it observes our elections. I mean, in the entirety of our democracy, there is never going to be a time when the media's eyes and ears are needed more than during an election. And the EC, the referee, is deciding which media houses get to cover the election.
So I'm sure
who gave them that authority?
The circular did not explain how they're going to decide which media houses would be allowed. And I don't know. And this decision is a so easy decision.
And I'm guessing that, you know, that the EC is here to issue the accreditations. So obviously they will issue accreditations to the media houses. They want them to be at the coalition. So if you don't get accreditation, you're not welcome.
This is something very, very troubling. Look, if I'm organizing my private event and I'm doing accreditation and I want to decide who will come and who won't come, that's up to me. But at a public event, a state event, where accreditation is required, as long as I'm a media house and I go through the process and I qualify, how do you restrict me? On what grounds will you restrict a licensed media house from covering a national or a state event if they have gone through the correct and proper process to be accredited for it?
Yeah.
On what basis will you restrict them?
One of the ways to ensure free, fair, transparent elections is to allow
everybody
to
participate.
If I have the resources and I want to do it, is that
look,
to
me? Our time is going, but let me just say, because this is important, right? Let me just say this quickly before our time runs out. I remember when Charlotte Hosse was running the EC, one of the things that she always insisted on was that, look, if a request is made that the EC should make an accommodation and that accommodation will not cause harm or in any way create an unfair advantage for anybody, they will grant it. They will grant it just so that those participating in the election feel that they are being heard. And they don't feel excluded.
We should come back to the subject. It's really important.
All right, all right.
Your morning radio.
Foundation for West Africa, and we will be joined by Professor Ransford Jampo, Professor of Political Science at the University of Ghana. In fact, he's on the phone with us right now. Good morning to you all.
Hi, morning.
Good morning, Kojo.
Indeed, it's great to have you. Now, Prof, I know you have a flight very soon, so I'd love to start off with you. And if you don't mind, just to pick your brain on the EC's memo, which has been sent out to their regional directors, and the subject is accreditation for media houses, and they are prescribing a limit to the number of media houses and personnel that can cover the election in constituency and regional coalition centers. So for constituency coalition centers, they are saying that they will allow 3 TV stations and 5 radio stations. For the regional coalition centers, they will allow 5 TV stations and 7 radio stations. They are also limiting the number of personnel per station, and they are not going to have newspapers or bloggers or any other media except TV and radio. Your thoughts on this approach by the EC?
Well, I don't know. When I also read it, I asked myself what the reason or the rationale is. And I usually would want to find out some of these things from the EC official directly, but I have not had the time to do that. And so I also kept asking myself, what was the situation previously? How were some of these things done? Is it that everybody had access to the place? Every media practitioner had access to the place or not? What was the situation? If it was the case that everybody, every media house had access to the place, then I'm asking myself, were there problems with regards to this arrangement. So what is this particular new directive, or what is this restriction aimed at achieving? I kept asking myself, and you guys are in the media, so you will be able to say whether you were always, all of you were allowed, or you were all not allowed. So,
well, Prof, this is my third. This is my third election, and I can state that normally there is an a call for accreditation application. So we apply, we are granted accreditation, and we are given access. They will certainly allow a certain number of people per media house, but they have never denied a media house accreditation once the media house has qualified or passed through their qualification criteria for accreditation. I've not been aware of any of them ever being denied accreditation.
Okay, so the fact that you are not aware doesn't mean that some were never denied. So the point is that if previously media houses, for the sake of transparency, have all been allowed, I don't see why there will be now restrictions. The Electoral Commission, I believe, know that one of its cardinal principles is transparency. And so it is expected to do everything possible to ensure that nobody is harmed with it, as far as its processes, as far as transparency of its processes, you know, is concerned. And one of the, I remember those days we were working at the Electoral Reforms Committee, one of the things that we spoke against and recommended, made recommendations to address, was the need for the processes of the commission to be more transparent, so that the idea of the commission operating in a certain strong room where people felt that it was within the strong room that some election results were cooked, would be demystified or would be addressed if you allow the processes to be more transparent. And so, if having more media houses there to be sure that they carry out whatever is going on there to the public would bring about more transparency, I think I would go for that. But it does not also mean an open sesame where so everybody, every blogger, everybody who can simply get information from other media houses would also want to be there. Otherwise, I'm sure the place would be took. So I think that the commission should sit and engage more with you guys in the media and explain to you the rationale for wanting to create that restriction. Once this is done, then I'm sure there'll be clarity, and then there wouldn't be any suspicion. Once this has not been done, then it creates an unnecessary room for people to suspect that things may be done in an opaque manner. But I don't think, in my candid view, I don't think the EC is interested in doing things in a manner that will be hidden from the people of that.
Very well. Let me pick the brains of our two other guests before we come back. Sulemana, let me ask you, do you feel, in fact, does the EC have the mandate to determine which media houses can and cannot cover elections?
Well, let me say that looking at the statement that we've all seen, well, not a statement, actually, a memo to the original directors, the content of it for me clearly indicates that this is a decision that was not well thought through, because what is being said is practically quite it doesn't even make sense. How do you say that, as far as you are concerned, when you say media, all you know is TV and radio? So for the first time, we're not going to have coverage by Daily Graphic. coverage by Ghanaian Times, Ghana News Agency, all the private, you know, newspapers. And then, you know, there are major online media outlets that are, you know, significant in terms of public communication and the media ecosystem in our country. And so you say those are also not going to be allowed to cover. The other thing is that if, I mean, for every constituency in this country now, or at least district, you would find a radio station or two. Now, if you go to, let's say, Bumpurgu Yoyo, where there is no television station, what does it mean? In fact, even in the northern region now, I think it's NTV and one TV station that is there. So if you now say it is limited to TV and radio, are you going to say in areas where there is no TV, you are not going to expand the number for radio or for the other media outlets? Practically, I think this doesn't make sense. And I believe that if there was, I mean, there is, I think in the communique, and yesterday I listened to Dr. Bosman, who was saying that it's because there are other entities and groups that have also applied for observation. And I think that if there should be even just one observer among the stakeholders, that must be the media. Because at the end of the day, elections are about the people. It's not about, you know, any other group. Ahead of the election, the same EC would say, oh, we are doing a campaign to ensure public participation, voter education, to ensure that people come out, to reduce spot ballots, and so on and so forth. Why don't they limit those campaigns to, you know, just a few media outlets? So practically, it doesn't make sense, and it is not good for our democracy. It's a retrogressive move. And I have no doubt that they would have to come back and basically revoke that decision, because it would further, you know, weaken the trust deficit that they have. Already we have been told by Afrobarometer data that trust in the EC has significantly reduced to less than 30%. And why would you want to, at this stage, embark on something like this, which will further, you know, decrease the trust that people have in the institution? And in elections, transparency matters. And transparency in this case is not about the EC saying we are transparent. It's about what the public see. It's about what people observe. It's about the perceptions of people. It's not about the EC and saying that, oh, as far as we are concerned, we are transparent and accountable. So for me, Kojo, is really a bad decision. I don't think that they thought through well. And I have no doubt. It will be shocking if the EC doesn't come out to reverse this decision.
Right. That kind of leads me quite neatly to what I was going to ask Dr. Pumpuni Asante. Dr. Asante, Sule has alluded to the Afrobarometer, the perception of how well the EC is doing or how trustworthy the EC is has taken a very big hit in recent times. How do events like this contribute to its, you know, reputation being damaged? I mean, it's not just this, it's other mistakes, printing errors, you know, announcing the wrong results, you know, losing BVR machines. How are these controversies affecting the public's view of the EC?
Well, good morning, and good morning to your listeners, and to Prof. Jampo and Sulemana. I think I'm not sure what is motivating the EC to make these decisions, but I think in many ways it's going to be counterproductive to the objectives of promoting transparency and so on. And I think, you know, from what Sulemana is saying, really, I'm sure if the EC has consulted the media, which they have to work with to make this election as transparent as it can be, I don't think they would have come to those proposals. Because I'm sure, yes, I mean, there's always some level of restriction that happens because of space and, you know, all of that. There are many stakeholders that you're trying to accommodate, you know, and, you know, everybody's important. But it's this kind of arbitrary sort of, you know, cutoffs and so on, really, you miss out quite a bit. I mean, as Suleimana rightly said, these days, the reach, you know, the kind of access that people have to digital media is so huge that, you know, you might think that bloggers are not important, or some, you know, online media house, but probably that's where people are consuming the most information. Even if you look at your organization, you know, multimedia, you are syndicated in many different, you know, so there might be ways in which it overlaps, you know, so the people who might be observing in one district are still part of your group of media, and you don't need, you know, the numbers doesn't become a problem. But you can only do that, there's the GJ, there are, you know, there's GEBA, there's, you know, all kinds of organizations that, you know, to understand how this works so that you everybody can get the best out of the process. So I definitely think that they have to re-engage, because otherwise I think what they are trying to do will be counterproductive. But
it's worth mentioning, I'm so sorry for the interruption, it's just worth mentioning because of what you just said, that it's not only the new media that seems to have been overlooked, but even newspapers have been left out.
And, I mean, you can't exclude, I mean, to get media out, to get access, you can't even exclude DNA. I mean, that's one of the most important, you know, sort of news dissemination outfit that you can get, and one of the most credible. So if you really want an accurate account of what has happened, and it reaches as many people as, DNA is one important source. And when you begin to think even about misinformation, and, you know, who are your trusted sources that you want to be there to carry the news, you know, you cannot exclude DNA, you cannot exclude Graphic, because most people, if they are in doubt, will go and check those outlets. So, you know, if you just take it as numbers, and I just have to cut off this and cut off that, you are really missing out on a lot. Right. So, but if you are engaging the media people themselves, they would give you advice, and you can come to a consensus that makes sense, you know, so... I definitely think that that's the approach. I would have the meeting with DJ Geba, and, you know, all the really, like, Media Foundation and others that understand, you know, the way the media works, and come to some consensus. And as you said, people have already been accredited, right? So if you're accredited, you know, by the operation of ETSO laws, you should have access to these places.
Right.
So there's all of that. So I really think that on that point, for me, there has to be a re-engagement, you know, to just give certain calmness that, you know, there's not going to be unnecessary restrictions that, as I said, people will think that it's making the process less transparent. So I hope that that will be a counterproductive. But just on the point about the AB data and the overtime sort of plummeting of, you know, trust ratings and so on and so forth. You know, one of the contradictions, of course, in that data is that also when people are asked about the 2020, the freeness of the 2020 elections, they are quite clear that it was free and fair, which, of course, wouldn't have happened without the Electoral Commission. But the point is, even in that sense, the fact that people, when they are asked about the Electoral Commission, don't have confidence in the Electoral Commission, or they don't trust the Electoral Commission, it's a problem that would have to interrogate. You know, what is driving that? I mean, AB doesn't ask why people are making those kinds of statements, but it is for stakeholders, you know, to evaluate it. And the point you have made, that could be a reason why, even when the EC is not conducting elections like in 2022, the trust rating is still low. You know, so you need to be unpack, you know, what is, you know, there's all kinds of tests we can do, analysis we can do to try and see what is driving this kind of. But certainly it is something that we have to, these things have to be avoided. I think consultation first is always important. because elections are always a stakeholder game. And even though the Electoral Commission has its independence and so on, you cannot do it alone.
Yeah.
You need everybody else, you know, to make elections transparent. So I thought the first thing to do if you wanted to have this kind of action is to consult first. Then that would inform your decision making.
Right.
Rather than make the decision and, you know, announce it, and then, you know, you have to now go and consult. Mm. And the time is short and so on, and, you know, people then get agitated and all that.
Thank you for that. Prof. Jampo, I know that we have very little time left. We're going to engage you first on our other issue of this apparent apathy in the run-up to the election. I'll take your thoughts on that briefly before you have to leave us. Well, first of all, do you see it that way? Do you see that there is a bit of a cooling off of excitement and anticipation towards this election compared to others in recent times? And if so, what do you think accounts for it?
Well, I wanted to first of all even talk about the activities of these politicians and flag bearers and political elites leading to the election, and how these activities have not generated much interest in many Ghanaians. You see, we should be worried about the monies that are being spent in going about the campaign of the various political parties. Look at the cost in terms of billboards, the cost in terms of t-shirts, the cost in terms of organizing rallies, the cost in terms of busting people to rally grounds and paying them money, the cost in terms of prime time daily adverts on TV and radio. I've been thinking about all these. The politicians are doing all these. And I've been asking myself, so who is going to, who is paying for all this? Let's say the politician is so rich and is able to marshal resources to fund all these. But after elections, what happens? Our quest to tackle corruption will still come to a knot if we do not put in place measures that set ceiling on campaign spending. If we don't do that, then politicians will continue to spend and spend and spend and spend. But when they win power, they by all means will have to find ways and means to recoup the amount of money that they may have spent. And that would be the recipe for corruption. When they win power, they have to spend time to recoup every amount of money that they have spent. And before they are, by the time they are done with this, they have no time to even think about the broader issues of representation and serving the interests of the people. Hello, am I on?
Yes, yes, we're listening.
Yes, so I'm thinking that, yes, I'll answer your question, but let us also be interested in the amount of money that these politicians are pouring down the drain in their campaign. And let us not see it as, well, they have their money and they are doing it. They may have gone somewhere to borrow, but they will have to pay back. How are they going to pay back? We should be thinking about it, because it has its own way of deepening corruption. It has its own way of leading to the marginalization of the interests of the people in governance. Because, look, we have to spend a lot of time to recoup before we think about serving you well. Now, you asked a very important question, whether I feel that people are not so upbeat about this coming election. Yesterday, when we had the opportunity to discuss this, I pondered over the issue, and I realized that, yes, I could not feel the same fervor, election fever that tends to saddle or, quote-unquote, catch many Ghanaians in the lead-up to elections. You know, the rate at which people get excited about elections translates into votes and determines the democratic health of a country. And in the literature of politics, if people become not too excited about elections, it may be because they are getting disengaged from the democratic processes. And many factors may explain this situation. But I would talk about two and probably add one more.
Okay.
See, in the developed world, this happens when people are comfortable. If you have a roof over your head, enough to eat, enough food to eat, you have leisure time and enough money to spare to enjoy, and you can afford vacation and all that, then the attitude becomes, if it ain't broken, why bother working to fix it? So if people are already well-to-do and people are comfortable, they don't get so excited about politics. Think about it. If people are so excited about Ghana, if people are so comfortable in Ghana, then this explanation may fit. But also, it could be because of the failure of the political elite in addressing the challenges of the people, leading to a loss of confidence in them, and culminating in the need on the part of the people to struggle and focus on how to make a living themselves. Hmm. So when people are struggling, they focus on getting a roof over their head and food on the table. Being excited about electioneering campaign then, in the judgment of people who may not put immediate food on their table, even as they struggle. And so it may be so unwise on their part for them to be excited about election. They will prefer to focus on themselves, particularly if they are excited and they've lost a bit of confidence in the political elite. They've been disappointed and they've now been made to think that, look, you have to survive on your own. So these are the two explanatory variables. You can now, and your discerning listeners can now fix Ghana's situation into one of them. But the third one that I may add is that, you see, in Ghana specifically, in the lead up to the 2016 election, you had civil society organizations talking a lot, or taking issues with the then government, subjecting that government to strict scrutiny, and then demanding accountability. They did so well. But it appears, you see, and so the more they did some of these things, the more they incited many people to want to be excited about the political processes. But it appears that now all these civil society leaders have toned down. You can hear IDEC not talking so much. CDD Kuja Sante is there. But they are not as vociferous as they used to be. And some of the civil society organizations, they seem to have also been divided among themselves. And so within the same civil society organization, they are speaking with different voices in a manner that reduces the way and manner people saw them as agents that would have to be articulating some of these concerns of people for the purposes of galvanizing their interests and keeping up their interests in the lead up to elections and electoral processes. And so if these civil society leaders and civil society organizations suddenly are not talking, then it also contributes to the reduced excitement, okay, in the electoral processes. And you can ask them, Kuja Sante is there, I'm almost boarding a flight, but Kuja Sante is there, he should be able to tell you why now CSOs have toned down and why now eminent Ghanaians, those who were asking for a Nyansafue, why they have kept quiet. It was when they were calling, looking for the Nyansafue that tripped up the enthusiasm of many Ghanaians in the electoral processes. Now, they are all not talking. And so then you can understand why people seem not to be so excited.
That's an interesting observation there, Prof. And I thank you for it. We'll let you go now. I can hear you going through the processes to get on board. We appreciate you very, very much. And that's Professor Ransford Jampo. He's a professor of political science at the University of Ghana. And policy engagement at CDD. And Suleiman Abraima, executive director of the Media Foundation for West Africa, are here to help us determine whether or not Ghanaians are just a little bit less fervent, excited, full of vim, anticipating
of our upcoming elections. It seems we're not as excited as we usually are, but if that's the case, why? We're exploring it with our two guests. And just before the break, we also heard from Professor Ransford Jampu. He aired his views on it. He actually, by his analysis, said that the civil society seems to be a lot less vibrant,
including Kojo Asante's CDD,
including the CDD represented by Dr. Asante, who is on the line right now. Listen, let's get a reaction from you, Doc. Do you agree? And if so, what could be the factors behind it?
Kojo, I don't know what Professor Jampu is observing, but I certainly I can speak for myself in the CDD, and that's not true. I was here in 2020, as active as I was in 2020, 2016. I don't think you can just go and Google, maybe put my name in Google or put CDD's name in Google, and I'm sure even as of last week, there's something we are speaking about or raising concerns about. Mm. So I don't think so. I don't think that that's the case. And I mean, not to hold brief for other civil society leaders, but people are even exhausted just having to, engage on so many different fronts all the time. So I'm not sure that's the case. I think there are a couple of factors that some of our long-term reports, we have about 100 long-term observers in the ground. We've been there from October. Mm. And some of the things have changed in terms of the campaigning, for instance. So there's on both, at least the two leading parties, but even some of the independent candidates and other candidates have employed more door-to-door campaigning than we've seen for in the past elections.
Doc, before we go on, just to respond to your issue about CDD's engagement, how would you say it compares to your level of activity before the 2016 or 2020 elections, with all the events that were occurring around those that time? If you compare it to this year, would you say that it's the same level of activity, or more or less?
I don't know how you compare, whether it's the frequency of activities, the scale of activities, how do you even measure that? I can just speak from how engaged I am in terms of the, whether it's electoral process, governance process. It's not just even in Ghana, but even in West Africa. It's still, for me, very intense, like any other year. So I don't know how, when people make those comparisons, I don't know I don't know what it is that they are trying to compare. But as I said, even in terms of frequency of advocacy efforts or, statements, just public engagement, it's still very much. We just released the Afrobarometer, just to give you an example. Just to engage with the public on that alone, that's like 3 or 4 weeks of just doing that. So I'm not sure what is meant by that.
But what about other?
We always do what we can do within our
capacity. What about the other CSOs in the space? Prof. Jampu referenced IDEG and a few others that tend to be, quite alive around this time. Before elections, what's your observation of the CSO space in general this time around?
IDEC is still very active. IDEC, particularly during elections, does a lot of work around the fees backed and engagement on civics in the districts and so on and so forth. And I have heard Dr. Akwete weigh in on different things, whether it's to do with security of elections or peaceful elections. I have been in several engagements where he's there and expresses his views as candidly as he can. So that's what I'm saying, that I don't know what measure of activity that people, and even online, I mean, I can mention all kinds of CDD, you know, fellows or associates or, you know, who are very active and very engaged. So I don't, as I said, I'm not quite sure what the assessment is. Maybe Sulemana too can add, but I mean, for in terms of other suicide, whether it's the anti-corruption space we've been talking about, the COPO bill for, and even last week or a week and a half when Dr. Bomia asked to meet civil society, we were there, made those issues very candidly and frontal, you know, about those. So I don't see, we don't operate that way. I mean, people, I don't know how people calculate these things, but you deal with the issues as they come, and you know, if you need to mobilize,
right,
you mobilize as well as you can, even in courts, going to court. I don't know how many court cases now we have. At least I know I'm part of, or CDD is part of two that's currently, you know, in the courts as well. So there's a lot of activity that we are engaged in.
Right. Okay. Now, Sulemana, you actually hold a contrary view. Your observation is that things are not as dull and demure as we may be suggesting. Tell us how you see it.
Well, Kojo, thank you very much. So to start with, I think it would not be a right analysis to look at the shift in the political campaign strategy or strategies of the two main leading political parties and its implication or its effect to say that it appears that we are in a dull moment compared to previous elections and all of that. If you would notice, in this particular campaign or electoral campaign, we are not seeing the big that we would see. So that you say, Ashanti Regional Rally, Western Regional Rally, and so on and so forth. We are not seeing too many of that. And quite big political platforms or rallies that seem to perhaps create the impression that, you know, the momentum is so hot, the debates are so high, and all of that. But if you look at the level of direct engagement being engaged in by the, you know, the two political parties, I think it's never been done this way before. As Kojo mentioned, I was present during this encounter with Dr. Bomia last week or so. And we talked about he's been to 274 or so constituencies across the country. I'm sure former President Mahama would say the same thing, if not more. And I think what they've chosen to do is to move away from the big rallies and so on to do direct constituency, community, polling station, and so on. And I think if we are not careful, we are likely to conclude that because we are not seeing the rallies and all of that, then things are quite dull. For the first time, we are seeing, you know, different stakeholders, even on the streets, academics, you know, and other stakeholders for the first time are on the street. And so I don't think that we are seeing a very dull political season as others will put it. The other thing for me is that this is our ninth election, and it would have been surprising if as a country there were no manifestations indicating that we are becoming more democracy literate, if I may put it that way.
Right.
Where people know that, look, all this metromizing, you know, battles and so on, cutting each other and so on, have not resulted in anything. And indeed, the efforts of civil society organizations over the years may not have yielded immediate results. But what we are witnessing also is perhaps part of it, where people are engaging without incidents of violence, incidents of, you know, the kinds of things that we would say is making the political season very hot. And so I think it's about the same. It's different strategy, which is yielding a different momentum. But in terms of the level of engagement with citizens, I think it's about the same. I would say that, I mean, I've been at this organization for, over a decade now, and maybe three elections, 2016, 2020, and now. In fact, 2012, I was even active, I should say. But this is perhaps the election that we've done a lot of activities than any other elections in the past. And I can say that civil society, as far as I know, have been perhaps even more active now than the previous elections or even the previous political seasons. Just to touch on what Professor Champo was saying, I think it's essentially a repeat of a rhetoric that is often coming from the NDC, that the media are quiet, civil society is quiet, and all of that. I mean, as Kodo mentioned, for the first time, I mean, in the last 4 years, we've been in court on a number of issues. I mean, Media Foundation is a civil society organization. The Fourth Estate is a project by a civil society organization. You take groups like CDD, ACEP, and the others. You know, they are doing battles. Domelevo's case was taken to court. You know, we are battling with SML. They've taken us to court. We've taken them to court on matters of corruption. I mean, a lot has been done. But it appears, I really don't know when people say that civil society has been quite inactive and all of that, what else they were expecting people in civil society to do. People reference Enyanzafui Muwohi. That was by Professor Mati. Professor Mati was a cleric, or is a cleric. So maybe if the clerics have been quiet, that perhaps we can look at that. But in terms of civil society, I think we've been more active, assertive, and very combative on issues of governance, perhaps this time than we've been before.
Okay. Well, Mr. Brahma, maybe not CSOs. Have others been quiet?
Well, others, I'm not even too sure. Because if you take, let's say, the Christian community or the Muslim community, Christian Council, Catholic Bishops' Conference, we've seen statements from Catholic Bishops' Conference and so on. If you take the TUC, it took TUC for this recalcitrant government to back down on the attempt to sell our state resources to an individual. It took TUC's action. I don't remember the last time there was that decision by TUC to say the entire, you know, labor movement or labor groups in Ghana is embarking on a strike action because of a decision of a government. But we've seen that under this government. So I am not too sure what exactly people should do. Yes, if you take our education sector, I would say that the leadership of the education unions have been cowed and repressed to submission. As we speak, teacher training colleges, you know, have postponed, you know, reopening to January, mid-January. And it's been done on the quiet. Why? Why would teacher training colleges postpone almost a full academic term and nobody is talking about it? Look at what is happening with free SHS. This expired food, expired rice saga. Have you heard any headmaster or any CHAS, as they call them, Conference of Heads of Assisted Secondary Schools? Have they come out? No. Because you come out and then you either lose your job or you are demoted and so on. And that has been clearly the attitude of this government. Some headmasters have suffered. And so they've all been cowed to submission. But that is in the context of the administration of the education sector and maybe not directly in the realm of governance. So yes, some groups have been quite repressed, and but others have remained resilient. On the media front, I think it's not as we've always seen it. A lot of media houses have been bullied, have been cowed into submission. I keep commending the multimedia group, but I believe that you've even had your share of the repression and the bullying tactics, either it's an economic squeeze or whatever it is. So a lot has happened, but I think that for civil society and some of the groups, I don't think that it's fair to accuse them of being silent.
Okay. I want to give the last 30 seconds to Dr. Asante, because you were making a point before I asked my last question. You were talking about how the strategy has changed on the ground for the political actors. Did you want to complete that point quickly?
Yeah. No, I was saying that our LTA reports affirm that for both the MPP, the NDC, but even some of the independent candidates, it's mostly door-to-door, it's mostly meetings, very few rallies. I think one of the things that you can even use to sort of even confirm this as well is that you have fewer incidents of political violence, because most of the time when the rallies used to happen, when people are going or leaving rally grounds where there are multiple rallies, that's where you get the clashes. But because you're getting fewer and fewer of those rallies, you are getting less and less of those types of, you know, political violence that we have experienced in the past. And then the Afrobarometer has also made the point about people expressing a certain level of apathy after 16 years, you know, 32 years from MPP and NDC. There's a lot of reflection, I think, that Ghanaians themselves are going through.
Right.
So I think for me, it's just those factors, you know, probably is contributing to more of that. But definitely, there's more direct engagement that is going on in a lot of neighborhoods and communities in Ghana.
Right. I've got to say a big thank you to both of you. This has been enlightening. We really appreciate your time with us. Sulemana Brahma, of course, Executive Director of the Media Foundation for West Africa. Dr. Kojo Pumpune Asante, Director of Programs and Policy Engagement at CDD. And earlier we had Professor Ransford Jampu, who is a professor of political science at the University of Ghana.